My guest at this time is Ryan Conklin, author of the new book, An Angel from Hell, Real Life on the Front Lines. It details his two tours of duty in Iraq as a member of the 101st Airborne Division out of Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And Ryan, some of our listeners might know you from the real world as well, but you got on the real world in part because of the amazing story that you had. I was fascinated in the book how you knew really pretty much right away after 9/11 that what you wanted to do was serve this country. Explain how you made that decision so quickly.
Basically, I was what the military calls a 9/11 baby. With the surge after the events of 9/11, the recruitment levels really soared for the whole military in general. And I fell in that category. Basically, after that those events, I was a junior in high school. That's about that prime time that you figure out where you want to go after you graduate. So my junior, senior year, I wasn't looking at colleges like all my friends were. I was just set that I'm like, you know what, after 9/11, I kind of wanted to, you know, put back what happened to us, to the people. And we were in Afghanistan at the time, so I wanted to go to Afghanistan and put it to the guys that started this. And so, I didn't want a cushy job or anything. I wanted to look back at my time and be like, all right, I did my thing, revenge, if you will. I use that term loosely. It's kind of harsh. But I wanted to be an infantryman. I wanted a frontline job where I could be responsible to look the enemy in the eyes, if you will. So I was set on what I wanted, and that's what I got.
You had so many different duties during your time in Iraq, from guarding the trial of Saddam Hussein to looking out for IEDs to close infighting and to Crete. Obviously, you had training heading into it, but how well did that training prepare you for the reality of the war?
I did have, luckily enough, to have 2 years of active duty training leading up to it, and I'm very happy with that. But basically the training that we did have was more focused on the Cold War style that the military has always been used to. I mean, literally a month before we deployed, I was in the woods of Fort Campbell, Kentucky, and wearing green camel paint, wearing the green camel uniforms that we had, and, doing dismounted training for, like, how to attack a bunker. Like, this is 2 years into the Iraq War. We knew what we were getting into. And so call it a lack of training, if you will, lack of accurate training. We didn't really have any focus on, you know, little things like Iraqi customs, Arabic training, the language, none of that. So we were kind of thrown into Iraq, and you learn on the go. And that's basically what it was.
We see clips on the news from time to time. We don't really see the tactics and the level of intensity, especially in the urban fighting type of scenario. Can you encapsulate that for our listeners?
Yeah,
from the adrenaline rush to hand-to-hand combat and everything else?
Basically, it's what you get into, what you're exposed to, is just being present out in the streets. We would drive around in about four Humvees for our convoy, for our platoon. And there's a whole lot of just being out there, being seen by the people. You'll have days go by where nothing happens, and it's quite boring. But, you know, those are the good days.
Right.
And then you have days where, you know, there's roadside bombs and snipers, if you will, drive-by shootings. It's really a hidden enemy that you have. So you always got to be ready. So you make your own little mindset to be focused as much as you can all the time. You never know when things are going to go from zero to hell in a second. So you're just always, you prepare for the worst and you hope for the best.
What's the emotional and psychological toll when knowing that it could strike at any time with all the way that these enemies fight?
It's interesting, actually, and it all kind of relies back on who you're with. A lot of people would be interested to know that it can be quite comical in a Humvee. You know, you wouldn't expect that. You'd think that we'd all be, you know, staring out the windows, wide-eyed, quiet, you know, in your own little world, just expecting things to happen. But it's not really like that. It's like, if you don't have a sense of humor, you are doomed. And you keep that with the guys in your Humvee, and there's joking around, you know. Yeah, we're still doing our jobs, but we're doing it with a smile, if you will, because you can't fight the situation you're in. You got what you got, and you volunteered for it. So suck it up and drive on and have some fun with it. So, you know, we'd have some very interesting conversations. Obviously, we had some music playing. we had our iPods on patrol. But anything to, you know, cut the tension, because if without those little things of keeping your sanity, tension will be so sky high that you're going to be too wound up for your own good. So you got to level yourself down and just roll with the punches and enjoy the people you're with. And, you know, you're on a team, you're in it together, and just roll with it.
your first tour came perhaps during one of the most difficult stretches for U.S. troops in Iraq, and you say in your book clearly that the second tour went much better. Security was in a much better situation. As you look at the situation now, are you confident that all the work that you and your fellow soldiers put in is going to be sustained?
Yes. That was something I didn't really see till the second time after I left in 2006. I would look back at the year and realize, what did we do? What measures did we take that I could leave that I feel made this country safer? And I didn't really have that because we worked with the Iraqi army, Iraqi police, and they were just unmotivated as they were. I just felt like anything that we said wasn't really getting into them, to the fact that they were going to, if we were to leave this place at a certain time, that they could run everything. And the IEDs and snipers, it was just like from day one to day 365, I really didn't see a change. It was just bad the whole time. And got home, got out, stopped listening to the news because I figured, well, we screwed that up. You know, we lost that. And I just stayed away from it. And then when I got recalled in 2008 and I spent all of 2009 back over in Iraq, that's when I realized the measures, the things that we did and the people that followed us, all the units that came in and did their time, and up to me going back for my second time, I really saw the progress that had been made. The Iraqi army, Iraqi police were definitely more motivated. They had more knowledge after several years of just being exposed to us. They pick up a lot of things. And they were the first line forces, and we were kind of their secondary efforts. If they needed us, they would call us and we'd show up. And that was completely reversed from where I was the first time. And that really helped me come to terms with, okay, I could finally see the progress that was made. Man, it took a long time, but we got to the point where we're at right now. And now we're focusing on the exit strategy and being there. I got back a couple months ago. I got back in January. Being over there, I think the Iraqi people themselves really want us to leave, because there was instances where they weren't even calling us from when things happened, and that was unheard
of. That's good, right?
It's great. You know, things happened. They were able to control the situation, and they weren't calling us. And that was kind of, it wasn't just to, you know, to show them that they could, you know, who's the boss now. But they basically wanted to show us that they're fully capable of doing what we were doing, and they really want to show us even more that they can run their, and they're good for their people. Their security forces are good. They understand their people, their customs, their traditions. They're great right now, and they really want us, I really think they want us to leave, just so they can show us that, hey, you know, we're a good country, and patriotism is something that's really starting to pick up over there. They want that. They want a sense that they control their country again, and I have no problems when we leave. I have full confidence that things will be good and tolerable and manageable for their own people.
Ryan, I think our listeners can tell from this interview, and certainly once they read your book, the caliber and the character of the troops that have been serving us over there. But what do you hope they learn from reading your story, specifically about the men and women who are defending us so far away?
My book basically was written, it's not a political book. It's nothing, I don't go above my area of knowledge. I don't talk about the greater aspect of what was happening in Iraq. I just talk about what I was doing and what my platoon was doing through my eyes. So basically, it's a real easy approach. Basically, from the people that have read it, I've heard they feel like they're actually on patrol with me, because I'm talking to a person. The way I wrote it, I'm basically talking to an imaginary person that knows nothing about Iraq. So sometimes my language can be a little harsh, but you know, I wanted that because that's the way we talk.
Well, it was a difficult operation, and to describe it honestly requires some of that. Ryan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Ryan Conklin is the author. He's a U.S. infantry veteran of the Iraq War, two tours of duty over there, the new book, An Angel from Hell, Real Life on the Front Lines.